Welcome to the podcast series from the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration 2023, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You're listening to the lecture entitled Alone We Go Fast, Together We Go Further, Migrants' Collective Disempowerment or Empowerment in the Americas by Abril Rios, Doctor of Philosophy candidate in Migration Studies at the University of Oxford. Abril is a psychologist specializing in social-cultural psychology and gender studies. Her doctoral research focuses on decision-making and empowerment among women, trans women, and other feminized people in the context of international migration in Mexico. Abril also supports a World Bank and UNHCR research program on displacement, poverty, and development in Kenya, and has worked on forced displacement issues in Uganda and Burundi. Enjoy the lecture.
All right, thank you for the introduction again, and thank you very much for IOM's invitation to participate in the seminar, especially to Sona Obornova for the great coordination and support. And thank you, Simona, for that great documentary and the final talks. I am connecting from a village in the center of Mexico, where I arrived 2 days ago after 10 months of in-person fieldwork with refugees and other migrants at the south and on the borders and in the capital. Well, I grew up in Mexico City, one of the largest cities in the world, and when I was a psychology student at the National University, I used to take a train like this one. The train I took to go to uni uses the tracks that are parallel to the tracks of a cargo train. This train crosses the entire country from south to north, the cargo train, not the one I took to use. And it crosses to the north, to the doors of the US. This is La Bestia, the beast or the death train, which many migrants continue to use to travel on its routes. They hitchhike trains like this in pursuit of dreams, safety, and opportunities. But they often find closed doors and huge walls. As I used migrants' routes, but for different purposes, I became more and more interested in why people migrate. This often made me think about my own family members who have done the journey north, mostly without documents. Almost every Mexican has a relative who has migrated to the US in pursuit of the so-called American dream. Later on, I became a migrant myself, in European and African countries for education and work. I was also pursuing dreams and opportunities. And today I dedicate my life to working with refugees and other migrants in Latin America and the South. For my PhD in Oxford, I look at processes of empowerment and decision-making among women, trans women, and other feminized refugees and migrants. I think a lot about migrants' agency and how migration can be empowering in some ways, whilst disempowering in other ways. In the next minutes, I would like us to think together about migrants' collective agency, their power to accomplish goals, and how alone we go far, but together we go further. In fact, most of us can relate to the power of the group and the difference that working together makes when we want to accomplish goals. In the case of Latin America, the so-called caravans have been highly visible examples of migrants' collaboration to overcome common obstacles and achieve shared goals. They have been instrumental, especially for those forced to leave their countries of origin. Today we'll discuss these collective mobilizations which have largely emerged in Latin America and across Mexico on the way north. And we will also look at other less visible forms of migrants' collaboration. I will focus on Mexico as a key hub of mixed migration in the Americas. And I will draw from scholarship produced mainly in Mexico by scholars such as Torre Cantalapiedra, Vargas Carrasco, Gandini, Fernández de la Reguera, Narváez Gutiérrez, among others. And I also will draw inspiration from a recent blog on organized migrants in the Americas, which I co-authored with researcher Jorge Morales, who explores forms of resistance and support to forced migrants transit in Mexico. So, are we facing a migration crisis in North Latin America and the Caribbean? Well, I think we are facing a crisis of human rights, security, poverty, and pervasive inequality that locks people out of opportunities. And let me put you in a bit of context and, complement to what Simona shared with you. Partly due to its geographical position at the south of a major global power, the US, Mexico has gained plenty of attention as the main country fueling a so-called migration crisis. Considering decades of migration, the Mexico-US corridor is the largest migration corridor worldwide. But actually, migration patterns vary. And for about a decade before COVID, the Pew Research Center estimated that more Mexicans returned to Mexico than entered the US. An important variation is also a recent demographic shift. Before the early 2010s, most people who crossed into the US and fell into US custody were Mexicans, typically men without children traveling in search of work. That trend shifted in subsequent years when migrants from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador started moving north in greater numbers. The number of families traveling with minors and unaccompanied children seeking asylum also increased, peaking in 2011 after the large 2018 caravan. Mexico and the northern Central American countries of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras are among the world's most violent nations and have some of the highest homicide rates, as you can see on this graph. And recently, though, the homicide rate in El Salvador decreased from about 105 homicides per 100,000 people in 2015 to about 18 homicides in 2021. You can see that trend in the red line on the graph. Official migration statistics, which are hugely limited by the changing nature of human mobility, suggest that such a decline in El Salvador has not had a significant impact on the number of people leaving that country. El Salvador continues to be one of the main countries of origin for Central American migrants crossing and settling in Mexico. The Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project developed a conflict severity index which identified 46 countries with several levels of conflict. 9 of them are in Latin America and partly coincide with the main countries of origin of migrants in the region. Worldwide, there are 7 countries with extreme severity levels of conflict. 3 of them are in the Americas. They are Mexico, Haiti, and Colombia. In my experience working with migrants, generalized violence and insecurity is a major so-called push factor. Socioeconomic deprivations as well as discrimination based on gender expression, race, and ethnicity add to these complex motivations driving migrants to seek safety and opportunities elsewhere. These are some of the stories they shared when discussing situations that push them to leave. They charged me a lot, and I couldn't keep my business anymore. They, she meant the gangs, a Honduran asylum seeker said. A Salvadorian lesbian refugee woman in Mexico said they wanted to kill us for being a gay couple. There is no future for my children there in Salvador, a Salvadorian migrant woman said. And nobody wants to be in Cuba. You can't be there. There is no work, there is no food, there is nothing. A Cuban refugee woman in Mexico said. It is in this context that migrants live in search of dreams, goals, and objectives. Many of them start their journey with a North American dream in mind, but many change their plans on their way and increasingly stay in Mexico or look for opportunities elsewhere. Mexico is a country of mixed migration. It is a country of changing patterns of origin, transit, settlement. It has one of the highest asylum application rates in the world. Considering only asylum applicants, the main countries of origin up to June 2023 were Haiti, Honduras, Cuba, Venezuela, and El Salvador. Recent mixed migration patterns have followed several cycles, including the emergence and continuation of the so-called migrant caravans. The operation of conflict amongst organized crime groups, mano dura, or iron fist policies against crime and drugs, trafficking, extortion, gang recruitment, but also socioeconomic and environmental deterioration, coupled with straight fragility, have pushed thousands of Latin American and Caribbeans to seek safety and better living conditions abroad. However, in Mexico, migrants often do not find safety and are subjects of violence at the hands of criminal organizations, government agents, including migration officials. just as it recently happened in the fire of a government migrant facility in Ciudad Juárez at the northern border, 40 migrants died and 28 were injured. They were locked inside and no migration official opened the door for them to escape on time. Migration policies and practices are complex and partly respond to the demands of interests of the U.S. due to policies that signal border externalization and prevention through deterrence, Mexico has largely become an obstacle for migrants on their way north. Not only do they face crime and insecurity, but also bureaucratic procedures that force them to wait in insecure and precarious bordering towns. This is explained by one of my research collaborators when he discussed a situation of forced immobility in Tapachula, South Mexico, a condition that he experienced as being a prisoner in the midst of freedom. As part of a group participatory photography workshop with migrants, I asked participants to create a self-portrait without their faces. This is what he said. I see myself just as another migrant, people migrating who are keeping quiet and repressing themselves in fear of being recognized. We are prisoners in the midst of freedom. Is Carlos, a Salvadoran asylum seeker trans man, 20 years old, actually. This photo, and this is not his real name, this photo partly reflects the role that Mexico has taken in migration dynamics in the Americas. Mexico's position has meant the country has been used as a buffer and external border between Latin America and the U.S. Tapachula is an entry point where thousands of migrants get stranded. They face forced immobility as they need to wait for their documents that allow them to move throughout the country. The only option for many is to apply for asylum, and they must wait in the state where their process started until they have documents to continue their journey north or move to other areas where they can find work and opportunities. The process can take a year, during which they must afford living costs for themselves and their families in cities that already have limited opportunities for local populations. As they wait for documentation that allows them to move, which for many is a visitor's card for humanitarian reasons, migrants face numerous challenges, including discrimination, unequal pay for equal jobs, obstacles to access health services and education, numerous forms of violence and abuse at hands of formal and informal authorities too. You might ask, why do they stay in these bordering towns in Mexico? They should leave or go to another area. It's not easy. Moving throughout Mexico without documents is extremely difficult, mainly due to two broad reasons. The National Migration Institute, who is supported by the National Guard, and criminal groups. Irregular migrants who dare to move through Mexico risk being caught by the National Migration Institute and being put in a migratory station similar to the migrant center where 40 migrants died due to a fire in Ciudad Juárez. Or to avoid the National Migration Institute checkpoints, they use alternative, dangerous routes where they very often fall in the hands of criminal groups. It is well known that most women and many men get at least raped in those encounters. So irregular migration in Mexico is a matter of life or death. Going back is equally challenging, and the doors of the north are closed. To avoid falling into the hands of crime, being extorted or returned, many migrants have to use guides or smugglers who charge thousands of dollars to take them north. This is a complex context that migrants navigate. However, people on the move are not only subjects of oppression and abuse. As agents, they also resist and negotiate and advance their goals. Goals that are actually based on human rights, such as life in dignity, liberty and security, education, work and health. To accomplish their goals, they often organize themselves, collaborate, and also receive support. Collaborating with one another as well as with organizations and allies on their way is crucial for migrants to accomplish their objectives. Let us talk about how the collective entails an opportunity to reach goals and expand individual and collective agency. This is empowerment. Oppression is power. And when there is power, there is resistance. I will outline one way to think about empowerment, and I want to highlight that I support a feminist agenda that promotes diversity within knowledge creation. I am not interested in using or generating universal conceptualizations. I also want to acknowledge that the term empowerment has become a buzzword. We hear it used almost as a product that can be created by someone and given or sold to someone else. But empowerment goes beyond that. The origins of this notion are linked with the transformation of unequal power relations. This is a change process that is multidimensional, relational, temporal, and context-specific. Perspectives on conscientization and critical consciousness developed by Brazilian Paulo Freire have greatly influenced conceptualizations of empowerment. For Freire, developing critical consciousness enables individuals to move from a stage of reflection and understanding to acting towards the transformation of oppressive power relations. Multiple forms of inequalities produced and reproduced through power relations influence people's ability to imagine and create alternative possibilities. Therefore, empowerment involves changing power relations in favor of those who previously exercised little power over their own lives. Empowerment is then a multidimensional and relational process which cannot be bestowed by others and requires an agency role. People are key drivers of the transformation process. People are agents that act and bring about change and exercise agency by acting to achieve goals they value. From this perspective, empowerment is a process of expansion of agency. Then empowerment entails the expansion of people's ability to make strategic life choices in a context where this ability was previously denied to them. This according to Kabir. These are strategic choices to live the life one wants. In order to choose, options need to exist and be seen. A sense of self-worth which emerges through critical consciousness about how people see and experience their worlds is critical, as it can bring people together to collaborate towards shared goals. On these perilous journeys, migrants collaborate in different ways, some of which involve non-linear processes of empowerment and disempowerment. One example is the so-called migrant caravans, which have attracted lots of attention, as they are hyper-visible in nature. They are visible forms of the exercise of collective power, and there are also other less visible forms of migrant collaboration, which I will discuss as I move forward. So the caravans, they are cross-border movements of large groups of people by land. They have increased in number and frequency, most notably since 2018, but they started years before that. Migrants continue to use this transit modality to head towards the Mexican northern border. They walk, hitchhike, and sleep mostly at shelters, churches, on the street, and at parks. In the face of the dangers and risks that I described earlier, many migrants have resorted to using this transit modality and make groups to move north in a relatively safer way. Most caravans crossing Mexico have been accompanied by co-organized by activists, human rights defenders, organizations, and other institutions, including the Human Rights National Commission. Although they account for only a small proportion of the daily migration flow through Central America and Mexico, caravans attract a lot of attention. The public shock of seeing people walking barefoot, carrying babies and strollers without food, creates a huge social impact beyond borders. Let me tell you about one of the largest caravans, which also Simona touched upon, is the 2018 caravan, which received plenty of media attention. It started in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and estimates suggest that there have been at least 30 more after that. The 2018 caravan emerged during Trump's administration and was used to fuel fear narratives during the midterm election. So it was formed in October 2018 with about 160 people and grew to about 4,000 as it entered Mexico. They moved under the motto, "We don't leave because we want to. Violence and poverty expel us." Accessing to Mexico was not easy. There were lots of riots and confrontations between migrants and the police who tried to stop them. The caravan was confronted maybe mainly by Hondurans, but also Salvadorians, Guatemalans, and a few internally displaced Mexicans who joined on the way. The Northern Border College in Tijuana estimated that most of the caravan members were men, but there were also women, children, and sexual minorities. In November 2018, the caravan reached Mexico City, where they received humanitarian assistance before continuing the journey. The numbers fluctuated, but estimates suggest that the caravan reached between 4,000 and 6,000 people in Mexico City. Slowly, migrants made it north in late November. Many reached the northern border city of Tijuana, but other groups also went to eastern border cities. In Tijuana, more than 6,000 migrants were registered as part of the caravan. They were temporarily sheltered at a sports center, Benito Juarez, and later in the Barrital camp, which was settled to host them, as they waited to be allowed to apply for asylum in the U.S. The number of shelters in Tijuana triplicated, and organizations quickly coordinated themselves to try to support migrants and address humanitarian needs. Irregular settlements continue to be formed and vanished. Still now. Tijuana is used to migrants. It is a city formed out of migrants. Most of its inhabitants are from different parts of Mexico, and many foreigners have lived there for decades. Before the caravans, the city was used to a specific form of forced migration, deported Mexicans returning from the U.S. and settling in the city. These events brought a demographic shift. The local population reactions to the caravans varied from empathy and solidarity to total rejection and aggression towards the newcomers. Some migrants managed to cross to the U.S. and others stayed. It is impossible to understand the mobilization of these groups without the support of organizations and human rights defenders. Numerous human rights defenders, advocacy groups such as Pueblos Sin Fronteras and other organizations in the region accompany the caravans. As such, the freedom of mobility claim intersects with the protection of human rights, including the right to asylum and security. As Mexican scholar Torre Cantalapiedra argues, the migrant caravans can be understood as both a transit modality and a form of protest, a form of migrant social movement, a route for empowerment. Despite migrants facing inequalities and abuse, as agents they also resist and advance personal agendas to reach their goals. The migrant caravans are illustrative examples of migrant-led political organization and the exercising of collective power. Such dynamics may lead to the processes of empowerment or expansion of agency. The organization of migrants in this way may signal a process of development of critical consciousness, which enables individuals to move from a stage of reflection and understanding to a stage of acting to transform oppressive power relations. In the face of restrictive migration policies, the operation of criminal groups and precarity in origin and transit countries, migrants appear to have identified that more can be accomplished by a collaborative group than by isolated individuals, thus achieving a shared goal and realizing their collective power. They started as caravans. The 2018 caravan is not the first one. They started as caravans of Central American mothers whose children disappeared while making the journey north to the U.S. The mothers, as a group, traveled the steps of their lost loved ones to draw attention to the journey's dangers. This caravan travels yearly through Mexico, and they are supported by advocacy group organizations, including Red de Familias Migrantes. The first caravan of mothers began in 1999. In 2011, a caravan or Via Crucis Migrante emerged in a context of a terrible massacre against migrants in the northern border. The Massacre de San Fernando in 2018, the new migration law, and the emergence of the Peace with Justice and Dignity movement fueled the 2011 caravan. Yearly caravans supported by organizations have been registered in subsequent years, including the large one that we described in 2018. From 2018 to 2023, at least 13 caravans have been registered. Just this last April, a new caravan took off from Tapachula. It was led by Irineo Mujica. He is an activist for human rights of migrants. The main reason was the fire of a migrant facility in Ciudad Juárez on March 27, where 40 migrants died and 20 were injured. Some of the injured people have such serious affectations that cannot move by themselves anymore. The head of the National Migration Institute, Francisco Garduño, this institute is the responsible one for this tragedy, has not been separated from office. This late caravan from April this year was arguably integrated by about 7,000 migrants. It was dissolved, and so have many others. This one was dissolved by the National Migration Institute after migrants were given documents that granted their regular stay in Mexico. You might think that these dissolved caravans failed, but do you remember I mentioned that many migrants get stranded in Tapachula while they wait for their documents? Well, this is part of what they need to accomplish their goals. They need documents to securely transit Mexico. So the success of the caravans can be analyzed vis-a-vis the immediate, medium, and long-term objectives of migrants. And what are the long-term goals? As I collaborate with Central American migrants in Tapachula, Mexico City, and Tijuana, many have shared that the U.S. goal is not the U.S. per se. It is the idea of opportunities and growth that the imaginary of the U.S. represents. The dreams and objectives of many migrant people are goals like the ones you or I might have. To be able to support one's family, to ensure good health for oneself and loved ones, to provide good education for children, to grow professionally, to feel safe and secure. I mean human rights. So it is not the American dream for the American dream. It is the idea of living in peace and dignity. But when migrants make it to the border towns and try to cross, they find closed doors and huge walls, some of which, by the way, were already there before Trump came up with the wall discourse. At the doors of the Northern Power, many migrants realize it is not going to be easy or possible to cross safely. After months of waiting, walking, facing extortion, sickness, and disappointment, they again get stranded, blocked. But they don't stop there. They create ways to move on with their lives. Although it is difficult, many change plans, and with that, their objectives. Some decide to move on and drop the American dream, while others stay and settle in border towns. Some stay for good, and others stay for some time, or years, until they are ready to try again, to try to the U.S. I mean. This can create a sense of being permanently on the move. Last Friday, a Haitian migrant told me he's decided to stay in Tijuana with his family and try to cross to the U.S. later. Him and his family made it all the way to Tijuana from Chile. Their final destination was the U.S. This is what he told his son too. The destination is the U.S. And now that they are in Tijuana, and will be there for some years, the boy is asking that, when are we gonna make it to where we were going? His dad is having a difficult time trying to help his son understand that the doors are closed and plans must change. Thanks to the civil society organization, Espacio Migrante, this Haitian migrant has found a job as an interpreter and community coordinator. He's collaborating with other migrants to establish new goals and improve living conditions in Tijuana. The organization Espacio Migrante is supporting a group of migrants to raise their voices and politically organize themselves to protect their rights and those of the migrant community who decided to stay in Tijuana. So migrants are not simple subjects over which power is used as agents. They resist, negotiate, and transform on equal power relations. Migration can be empowering. We need to create pathways that unlock such potential. Migrants continuously collaborate with one another to accomplish their goals. In other countries, we also see caravan-like movements, such as in Hungary, or in Slovenia, in Greece, and in Turkey with the recent caravan of light. The caravans and the migrant parliament are examples of collective power that can lead to empowerment. There are also other forms of collective power that have the potential to expand migrants' capacity to make strategic life choices, to live the lives they want. Some of these involve transit strategies to reduce vulnerability and protect mental health while ensuring the accomplishment of goals. For example, it has been registered that LGBTQI plus migrants form protection groups to take care of each other along the way and reach their destinations safely. In fact, one of the first groups that arrived together as a subgroup of the 2018 caravan in Tijuana was a group integrated by members of the LGBTQI plus community. This photo was created by a Salvadorian trans woman who received support from two different organizations that provide assistance to LGBTQI plus migrants in Tapachula and then in Tijuana. The support from these organizations has been instrumental for her to be able to safely express her gender in Mexico and to reach the U.S., where she currently is after more than a year of waiting in Mexico. Another collective strategy that aims at the achievement of migrants' goals is the decision to migrate as a family group rather than alone. This photo was taken by a research collaborator who talked about the importance that being with her family has for her. When I asked her to take a photo of what is important for her, she took a photo of the hands of her family members who were traveling with her. Another woman, a Salvadorian refugee in Tijuana, also highlighted the importance of being together to face pain and keep on going. She said, "If we go together, the pain is not felt so strongly. If we cry together and help each other to keep on going." Considering the emotional aspects of migration is crucial, as it can help us understand motivations to leave, choices on how to move, together, alone, etc., routes, as well as destinations. For example, fear. Due to fear of being abused by criminal organizations, many migrants have chosen Tijuana, since it arguably requires the use of a bit safer route compared to eastern routes. Due to fear, many migrant women make deals with men who play the role of a partner that helps them reduce the risk of being abused on the way. Fear in itself is actually a requirement to become a refugee under the 1951 Refugee Convention. Other psychosocial aspects are also critical in shaping migrants' choices and their ability to reach their goals. Sense of belonging, resilience, post-traumatic growth, all influence migrants' decision-making capacity. Today, I have shared with you three examples of migrants' collaboration, which can lead to empowerment or to the expansion in the ability to make strategic life choices. Such choices are based on goals people value, such as security, education, health. There are important points that I did not discuss or question here. Some of them are the mechanisms behind pervasive violence, poverty, and insecurity that push migrants out of Central America. The continuous extractivist practices and neocolonial powers that perpetuate poverty and inequality and push migrants to seek opportunities abroad must be integrated into policy making and programming aimed at ensuring humane and orderly migration for the benefit of all. It is also crucial to critically assess how the ongoing migration regime and its implementation in the Americas and elsewhere externalizes borders, produces forced immobility, exacerbates migrants' vulnerability, and hinders opportunities for empowerment. Migration can be empowering. It can help expand people's capacity to make strategic life choices. To unlock the empowering potential of migration, it is critical to consider group dynamics and foster collaboration, not only to promote social cohesion between migrants and locals, but also between migrants themselves, creating enabling spaces that allow them to design solutions based on their needs in origin, transit, and destination. Further investment, international cooperation, and responsibility sharing is also critical to develop social protection schemes that enhance living conditions and experiences of migrants at all stages. Migration is not a problem. Migration is our origin. It is our past, our present, our future. If we collaborate, we can transform it into an opportunity for origin transit and transit communities and also in settlements. Thank you very much for your attention.
This lecture was part of the 9th EMN Educational Seminar on Migration, entitled Protection of Migrants in Vulnerable Situations. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.